Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m. It's almost sunrise and sunset, except that we're in standard time here in California and sunsets at 5. Drives me nuts. Anyway, we also broadcast Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, and we encourage you to click on the link to our guest's website. I've said it before. I'll say it one more time. We do not reinvent the wheel. We send you to the inventors of the wheel. Those are our guests. They have the information, and I encourage you to check out whatever it is that they have to offer, because if it resonates with you, you ought to check it out and dive in and put it to use for your betterment and so forth. We're here to give you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true, looking for those new ways of living. And I think maybe one of them is a fun subject I love discussing. We've talked about it numerous times over the 8-plus years that we've been doing this program, and in the 35-plus years I've been interviewing. It's just incredible when you start talking about the very thing you're listening to. Not exactly my voice. No, that's not what I'm referring to. I'm referring to sound. Sound waves. Something I'm going to share with you later on in the program that I'll share with our guest as well has to do with something that I was actually told that the guest I wanted to interview at the time wouldn't talk about this because they didn't want that to get out to the bad people because they'd use it for evil means. And I thought, am I the only one that thought of this? I don't think so. I believe in the collective mind. We're going to be talking with Jonathan Goldman, and he is into sound like you wouldn't believe, along with, I believe it's his wife, Andy Goldman, and we're going to talk with him here on the program about a lot of the things that he's doing, a lot of the work that he's doing. He has several CDs out, as well as a book. Chakra Frequencies is one of the books, Tantra of Sound. We're going to talk about sound, the sound that he makes, not only on this program as he and I talk, but also the sound that you can find on many of the CDs available certainly through his website. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Richard, it is great to be talking to you, and I'm intrigued that what sound would that person not talk about that could be used for potentially negative uses. We don't have to talk about it now. We don't want to begin the show with that, but that's got me intrigued, because of course anything that can be used positively can be used negatively from my perspective.
Sure, absolutely. It doesn't make any difference. There's only one thing that I have observed that cannot be, and I'll use the word polluted, okay? And maybe there is a second, depending upon how you perceive this. The one thing that really cannot be polluted, can be blocked, and this is why I say there's a second, it can be detoured, if you will, that's light. Light cannot be, the original light, for example, the light of the sun, certainly it can go out, but while it's lit, while it's emanating that light vibration, if you will, it is what it is. And you can certainly block it with, you know, smog or your hand or, you know, going underground. Well, sound is sort of along the same lines. You can certainly plug your ears so that you can't hear it. But if you turn sound up loud enough, you can feel it in your body. As a matter of fact, there are some cars driving down the road today that are giant vibrating machines because you hear them booming from 5 and 6 cars behind you, which is astounding to me. It's like, how are these people staying in their cars? And I remember a medical report that came out about that that said that they're doing damage to their hearts in particular, because the heart has its own beat. And we can hear that as well, especially with a stethoscope, if not with our ears up to the chest. Now, what is it about?
Can I interject?
Go right ahead.
Because, you know, so about 2 weeks ago, they began doing construction next door to me, and I'm extremely sound sensitive. And I have been using every modality of sound that I know of to try to stop, you know, to try to, you know, shall we say, negate the sound of bulldozers and the beeping of trucks and things being digging, and, you know, trying everything from earplugs, etc. But once again, the frequencies, some of them are so low that they are basically going into the body, because sound is, if you like, transmitted through the air, which is through our ears, obviously, but also through our skin and our bones. So if something's going through our bones, which is, you know, why, for example, deaf people, you've seen people who are deaf dancers, and they're on stage and they're able to pick up the vibrations through their feet and therefore dance to it. So it's really an interesting phenomenon. Really an interesting phenomenon.
Well, it looks like we're going to dive into that realm that I mentioned at the beginning of the program a lot sooner than we thought, because the answer lies, and I'm going to guess that the Bose company incorporates this into the noise-canceling headphones that they sell. I think it's the same principle. I don't know this. All I know is that I've been working with sound for 35 years, and when computers came along, even though I was aware of this back in the 80s, because one of our chief engineers came in, and he was wiring up a turntable, a stereo turntable, and we went to test it, put a record on, and the vocals, I could barely hear. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like they were way off in the background, and I asked the engineer, says, what happened? That doesn't sound right. He said, oh, hold on a second. And he corrected it, and boom, the voice came forward, and it sounded just fine. And he says, yeah. He says, one of the channels was out of phase, and I just put it back into phase, and everything's fine. Well, when I got to started working with the computer, and I started working with the software that I've been working with for almost as long, 25 years, it was originally called Cool Edit, and now it's Adobe Audition.
Oh, sure. I love Cool Edit, incidentally.
Well, yeah. When I was reading one of the trade magazines, on a side note here, I came across an article going through the various major software programs for sound editing and the organizations, agencies, businesses, corporations, and governments that were using them. And I came across BBC. And I'm reading through the article, and all of a sudden I see this picture of a screenshot of Adobe Audition, or then Cool Edit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading along, and BBC's been using it for a couple of years. And so I thought, well, you know what? If it's good enough for the BBC, it's good enough for me, and I stay with it. That's just what I use. Anyway, so I'm playing around with audio from an album that I transferred to the computer. And I remembered what had happened back on that day in the station at the turntable. And so I started playing around with the edit window and the stereo signal. And I took one channel and I flipped it vertically. And I take that back. I flipped it horizontally. And then I mixed the two tracks together into a mono track. And this, again, was a genuine stereo signal. I had separation on the left and the right. And I played the audio. I played the track. And this was a song with vocals.
And
the vocals were way in the background.
Oh, okay.
And I realized what I had done. I had created a sing-along tape, if you will. Okay?
The first karaoke.
In a manner of speaking. And then I took a mono track. It was just a regular mono track. I converted it to stereo. I took one of the channels out of phase. I mixed it back to mono, and the audio disappeared. And I then realized that if you were to take the sounds that are going on outside your window of construction, and if you could do it at real time, if you could get the out of phase sound that's going on outside and combine it with the sound that's going on outside, what happens? It should disappear.
You know, you're totally correct. I've thought about doing it. It seems like such an extraordinary amount of work that I am practicing a new form of sonic meditation.
Uh-huh.
Where I am trying to transform the sounds that are occurring that normally drive me a bit batty, and turning them into the sound of Tibetan monks chanting and whatnot, using my, if you like, imagination. So, which is actually a really high sonic yogic technique that I have not yet achieved, but I'm trying.
Well, I remember discovering this, and I was sitting in Phoenix with my then girlfriend, now wife, and we had gone to a Wayne Dyer lecture.
Oh, nice.
And at that lecture, Stephen Lewis was there. And he is a gentleman who has developed this computer process where he takes your photograph and he puts it into the computer. And what he does is that he has the computer analyze the photograph. Now, you know, they say wives' tale about the Indians, and they don't want you to take their picture because you are stealing their essence, their soul, their mm-hmm. energy, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's, I think, some truth to that based upon what Stephen Lewis in his book Sanctuary talks about. And what he does is he generates he analyzes the frequencies, and then he generates the, if you will, counter frequency to help to balance the frequencies that are creating the dis-ease in your body. And he can do this I think his place was in Las Vegas or in Nevada. Mm. We're living in Phoenix, so distance doesn't matter. When you're talking energy and vibration, distance does not matter.
Mm.
And so I'm listening to him talk at this event, and I'm thinking, I've got to share what I've discovered. So I took one of my business cards, and on the back, I diagrammed it out, and I took it up to him, and I showed him, and he was rather intrigued by it, that I understood basically what he was doing in essence. I mean, it was simplistic, but it was still in essence what he was doing. And then I remember talking with his screener, if you will, a few days later on the phone, and I shared this with her, probably a mistake on my part, because that's when she said, no, he won't want to talk about that, because if the Russians, because we were still in the Cold War at that time, got a hold of this. And I'm thinking, really? I'm the only human being on the planet that discovered this, and I better not disclose this? Come on. I believe a little bit more in the collective consciousness, and that I'm not the only one. That's why when I hear about only Americans who have discovered certain things or developed, like the car and the radio, well, there were people on other parts of the planet completely disconnected who came up with the same thing around the same time. So collective consciousness is a pretty real thing, anyway, so that's the story of that discovery on my part. And then a friend of mine, he shared with me something that just blew me away. For example, this interview that we're conducting, and you heard the music at the beginning of the program.
Mm-hmm.
What if I wanted to remove the music? Because right now, in the recording that is flowing past on my screen, that music's embedded in this interview.
Mm-hmm.
But what if I was to take the music track that I played, and I put that piece of music out of phase and put it on a second track below the track that is recording all of this, and then I played the audio, and he says he's done this, and I have too. The music goes away, so now all that's left is your voice and the voice of your guest. So if we do the same thing with the music that we're going to feature here on this program today, and I wanted to remove it, I could remove it by taking the soundtrack and putting it out of phase, matching it up precisely in, you know, with the other segment of the interview where that music is, and the music goes away. It disappears.
It's so interesting that you're saying that, because I was just when I was at it with a Grammy Award-winning engineer today, and trying to fix the audio of a video, and he basically just asked, because part of the sounds were, if you like, a little bit distorted because it had been recorded too loud, and I would have liked to have, like, brought it down and make it disappear. And he said the easiest thing would be simply to, like, put all the different tracks individually together and remix it. I said, yeah, but what you're saying is really, really an interesting phenomenon. I mean, this idea of, if you like, phase cancellation is it's really important, and very few people are even aware that you can take sound and make it disappear. But I'll tell you, if I'm not mistaken, apparently, here's a story that I heard, that Eno, when he recorded, would not record with headphones, so that he, like, needed the sounds to be coming through speakers. But unfortunately, then that would go into the microphone and, be recorded, and you wouldn't get separation.
Yeah.
So did I say Eno? I'm sorry. The guy who's the lead singer of U2 is
Bono. Yes.
But Eno was engineering this.
Ah.
And in order to fix it, what he did was he put everything out of phase, all of the musical stuff out of phase, so that Eno could hear it, but it wouldn't be picked up by the microphone.
Interesting.
So yeah. But it's a fairly advanced musical thing. Now, of course, we're here to talk about the healing nature of sound, but I love having this conversation, so thank you.
But I think, too, that this ties into that, because when you create the various types of music that you have, and again, I have several of the CDs. One of them is Healing Sounds Frequencies 2, Chakra Chants, Reiki Chants. That's one I have not had a chance to listen to completely through, although I did listen. I put them into the multi-track session, and I believe it is the Reiki. No, it's the Chakra Chants. I put it into the multi-track. I put each track in there, and I immediately picked up on the change of tone from the first to the second to the third to the fourth, fifth, sixth, and so forth. And I was like, at first, the first thought was, that's very interesting that he did that. And then, of course, quickly it dawned on me, well, yeah, but why is that so surprising? Because each chakra in vibration increases as you move up the scale, if you will, to the crown.
Right. And, you know, an interesting thing, though, I just got back from England where I was teaching. This is crazy. At the Royal College of Music, I was teaching the subject of the divine name, which we'll be talking about a little bit later, I guess. But I was teaching that to this rather large audience. And it was just quite an amazing phenomena, because one of the things I began saying is, I said, you know, modern sound healing, as we take it, really began in England in the 1940s and 1950s with a guy by the name of Dr. Peter Guy Manners, which is very, very interesting. But it was like such a unique experience to be at the Royal College of Music. It was just, you know, who'd have thought that?
Well, I'm going to throw something to you, and I do want to get into the divine name, because to me that is a very interesting subject, especially from my background working for 15 years as I did in a Christian radio station and hearing all of these different messages about the divine name, what is the true name of God and so forth. And we'll get into that. But when I was a child, and I've shared this numerous times, when I was a child and I was laying in bed sick and I was not feeling good, I don't know if it was the flu, whatever it was, and my mother and one of my four sisters, was standing by my bedside. And I was lying there, and I was moaning. And my sister asked my mother to get me to stop moaning. Obviously, it was upsetting to her. It was not something she really wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother said to her that she said, well, but that's how he heals himself. Now, I didn't know that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
All I knew was that, and I've experimented with this over the course of time when I've had dis-ease in the body, and it's never the same frequency, and it's never the same frequency even during the healing process of that specific dis-ease at that time. It'll shift around.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have sort of shut that part of ourselves off, our own healing abilities, because we think that it's inappropriate, or again, like my sister didn't want to hear it, you know. It'd be better if you could do it by yourself. And I encourage my wife, when she's not feeling well, to do the same thing. Go ahead. You're not going to bother me, because I know that your body knows the best tones.
Well, Richard, what happens when you stub your toe?
A lot of times you'll say a few words, you'll say ouch,
or you'll run around and groan.
And
Right. You sound forth with something. Mm-hmm. Now, something that cracked me up. I, on a level, come from a family of doctors, and, you know, there's an aspect of me that is both a musician and a scientist, but sometimes science cracks me up. And there, particularly, a couple years ago, some scientists did an experiment from my perspective, what it is, this is called toning, or it's called keening. It goes by a 100 different names in 100 different languages, but basically it's making sound to release pain and release imbalances, and mm-hmm. that's what you were doing.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, but this guy did an experiment where he had his students or his experimentees plunge their hand in ice water, and he found that if they cursed when they made a sound, they could basically stand the pain more. The outcome was that cursing reduces pain, and of course the if you like, reality is that making any sort of sound will help you reduce pain.
Yeah.
But this guy was focused on doing that, and therefore now this is a peer-reviewed scientifically proven aspect of the benefits of cursing. Don't ask me.
I take the same tack with that I do with Chinese medicine that's over 5,000 years old. It works, okay? I'm not going to question it. And as a matter of fact, if I was ailing right now and I had my choice between Chinese medicine and orthodox traditional, I'd go with the Chinese medicine first. Because I know that it's not only going to help me to get myself back into balance, it in the process isn't going to hurt me.
Ah, what a concept.
Yeah.
What a concept.
When we come back, I want to dive into the divine name. I've heard of, and of course there are biblical passages that list all of the quote-unquote names of God. But in the context of our conversation of sound and vibration, we're going to find out if it's revealable what the divine name of God is, or what the divine name is, and if we can utter it, what it sounds like. We're going to come back and talk more with our guest, Jonathan Goldman, the author of a number of CDs, as well as a book called The Chakra Frequencies, Tantra of Sound. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm talking with Jonathan Goldman. We're talking about what you're hearing, sound. That is what's coming out. I have to say that there was an interesting program as we dive into the divine name that really, I think, showed the power of sound and the sound vibrations. And it was a recent episode of a program I love a lot called The Big Bang Theory. And you may have seen this episode.
Yeah, sure.
Where they had the baking soda and water on cellophane on top of a big old woofer, and they were running bass tones through it, and it was jumping around, but it was in a cohesive form. It was fascinating to watch that. And I have to wonder, when we remember the words primarily from the beginning of the book of Genesis, in the beginning was the Word. Now you have to almost assume that the Word was a sound, and that sound was uttered. And of course it goes on, and the Word was God.
Mm-hmm.
And it is said that that was the first, if you will, thing that existed in the beginning of, say, this universe. So let's talk about the divine name. It's often been written that the name of God, the Creator, whatever other attribute, adjective you want to use, is not utterable by the human mouth, and that it is not to be, because it would be blasphemy. You don't say that name. And it's like, well, then how do you call upon the divine name if you don't know the name and what it sounds like? So talk to me a little bit about your research into the divine name and what it sounds like.
Wow. You've said so many things that were so interesting, including talking about the Big Bang Theory, because the guy who plays Sheldon is mm-hmm. actually a very good Tuvan overtone singer who does the... he does that really well. And
yes.
I was quite surprised when I saw it on the show. But anyway, getting back to the idea of the divine name, this actually occurred... we're going to go in the Wayback Machine to March 21st, 1986. Don't ask me why I remember that date out of all of them, but it was the equinox of 1986, and I was in deep meditation, and I was given a series of vowel sounds that would resonate the chakras going from the first chakra to the seventh chakra. And I began teaching this, and I use that, of course, in chakra chants. And in fact, if you go on the internet, you'll probably see that about 70 to 80% of any system of using vowels to resonate the chakras is based upon the system that I created. So obviously, a lot of people use it. But anyway, I would always go from 1 to 7, chakras 1 to 7, from the root to the crown. Well, one day I was, I woke up, and literally this voice, as I'm waking up, said, "We want you to sound the chakras going from 7 to 1, and then back up to 1 to 7. And I had been so entrained to go from 1 to 7 that I literally couldn't go from 7 to 1. I had to write them down and then do it, because it was sort of like reciting the alphabet backwards, which I don't think I'd be very good at doing. And when I did it, two things happened. First of all, I felt the energy go from my crown, the top of my head, down to the root, and then back up. And I expected this. But second of all, I also heard this sound that was, I literally, you know, didn't know very much, except that in the Abrahamic tradition, as it's called, there was a name that was found in the Old Testament that was basically banned in the Bible, but it did indeed used to be known by the people. And then, from my perspective, it was only the priests were allowed, and then it was banned. And because it was banned, it became lost. And when I listened to the sound, I thought, gee, this really sounds very much like this name. At the same time, Richard, I have to say that because it goes from the crown to the root and back up, it is a universal sound, meaning that anyone, regardless of their belief system, if they make this sound, will have that experience. So it works as kind of a hotline to the divine. Now, what's easiest for me right now, and if I may have your permission, for about a minute, is I have a minute long of myself intoning this divine name, and it is done purely through vowel sounds, and you may hear different tones occurring, but these are actually the harmonics that are associated with the vowel sounds. So I'm going to play this now. Are we ready?
I'm ready.
All right. And this is the divine name. Another shot, giving a listen. What do you feel? And now just one more time. Here we go. So on a level, it's a lot easier to listen to it than to sort of describe it to people.
Right, right. You know, the images came flooding back, including the sounds came flooding back. My best friend and I used to occupy the studio and control room of a radio station after they signed off. And this was a radio reading service for the blind and visually impaired back in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
And we would go in and we would, at that time, play radio. He and I would bring in some of our albums, and I would throw up a reel-to-reel up on the machine to record it. And matter of fact, I have been finding, I think I now have 5 or 6 or 7 reels of these radio shows that we did. But what I would do near the mid to end point of our session, which could go on for a couple of hours, so we were there till 2 or 3 in the morning, is I would throw the reel-to-reel into tape mode, throw it up on the console and pot it up ever so slightly, turn the volume up ever so slightly. And then I would start out, because it would be Christmas time, singing Silent Night with that echo.
Yeah.
And then I would just do A-E-I-O-U, you know, and let that reverberate in my head, because at that time I wore headphones. And that's what came flooding back when I heard that sound of the divine name that you just played. And it was like, wow. I was kind of doing that kind of thing. Wasn't saying the divine name per se. But I was having fun. We were playing. And that was one of the things that, as I go back and listen to these things, that they sound silly to probably to some people. But to me, it's like, wow, we were doing some neat stuff. I mean, for a couple of amateurs, we were, it was coming across pretty good. But
some of the greatest discoveries occur that way.
Yeah. I every time I hear that kind of thing, I think of the Post-it. And how that came about, I think. Really?
Right. Well, you know, talking about, you know, the echo that was there, and I did that simply as an attempt, because I've at times had the opportunity of being in some different places that were sacred temples and, you know, Shark Cathedral and all this other stuff. And the ancients really knew what they were doing.
Well,
so they knew that, you know, you made these sounds, and all of a sudden the harmonics and... For people who don't know what harmonics are sort of the color of sound, and they're basically frequencies within frequencies that are found within every note. And these cathedrals would literally bring out the harmonics of different sounds.
There's a place in Ireland, north of Dublin. It's called Newgrange. And there's a primitive mound, prehistoric mound, that you can enter into. There's a chamber inside this big earthen mound. And they allow you to go in there. Now, it's positioned so that on the winter solstice, the sun, as it's rising, goes straight into the entrance and will illuminate the interior for that complete, you know, that period of time. Well, my wife and I were able to go inside that chamber. Now, we weren't there, of course, on the winter solstice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I noticed, and they will not allow you to take pictures or sound recording. They will not allow you to record the interior in any way, shape, or form other than through your own senses. And the one thing I noticed, even then, and this was back in 2004, I can't believe 10 years, 11 years ago,
mm-hmm.
The acoustics were perfect. It wasn't hollow, and it wasn't dead. It was astounding, the perfection of the acoustics in that room. Now, we have a theater here in Santa Barbara. It's called the Granada Theater. Mm. And they had an acoustician who I have interviewed. And I didn't know that was the name of the guy who perfected the baffling on the walls, but acoustician is a great name. Love to have that title. And I remember going in and to some events, symphony orchestra performances and so forth, and I would look at all of these panels, and there are hundreds of them in there. No two are alike, nor are they positioned alike, because of the way in which they went about setting the acoustics for this particular theater or hall, if you will. And he explained to me why that was, so that every person in every seat, whether it be in the balcony, in the back row on the floor, or in the front row below the symphony, would get, or in the balconies off to the left or the right of the stage, would get the optimal sound. And I thought, that's incredible to be able to create. And yet here was this place, this prehistoric site, where the acoustics were just that. And I didn't see any baffling sound panels or anything. It was stone. It was made out of rock. And it wasn't hollow? That's what really blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you know.
Go ahead.
I mean,
go ahead.
You know, I could tell you a couple of different stories, too, that are, you know, semi-mind-boggling as yours. But it is really, it's a reality. The ancients built stuff. And there are obviously, you know, you're saying this acoustician who... you know, built this thing now, who, you know, the knowledge is still there, mm-hmm. but most people don't care anymore.
No, they don't. And That's one of the things that I, when I am working with people, and I remember one of my guests on this program, I went to her website before we interviewed, and I watched one of her videos, for example. And you talk about, you know, unfortunately, not caring. And I had to share with her, and I did it as kindly as I could, and I said that your message is important. What you have to say is so important that you need to remove that video from your website, and you need to have it done so that the lighting and is better. Your monitor is not your lighting, and the condenser mic that's built into your monitor is not your microphone. You need to have a microphone that's clipped onto your blouse or what have you, and you need to look at the background that people are going to see, and you need to set the stage so that you are showing the viewer that what you have to say is important, so important that you care about and so forth. So when I think about sound and when I think about audio, when I was working for the Christian station and I would get programmers who would come to me, and I didn't get into the dogma. I mean, I in other areas I did, but when it came to producing for someone, I didn't care what their message was. It wasn't important. What was important was that their message got out so that the listener could make up their own mind. And if it was muddy and distorted and all of those things, I'd say, well, you know, we need to clean this up. We need to find a way to do this.
Well, if I can for just a moment, getting back to the divine name.
Yes.
What I find really interesting is that when someone learns to do it, and it's a so I can teach it in workshops, and I have this new release book from Hay House called The Divine Name, and it's something that people can learn to do, and once again, regardless of your belief system, but once you experience the resonance in your body, and also I like to call it, as I said, a hotline to the divine, once you experience that, this is something that nobody can take away from you because it is real for you. And I think that's really important. And one of the things that I want to do, just I'm going to jump just for a moment, if it's okay
do
with
it.
You, just
do it.
For our listeners, just talking about just the effects of sound, any sound.
Mm-hmm.
Because, a lot of people, they don't really think, well, sound, so what? But sound goes into our ear and then goes into our brain, and it affects our nervous system, our heart rate, and our respiration. So listening, for example, to soothing, gentle sounds can relax us, reducing stress, which is considered to be one of the top detrimental factors to our physical body. And just I'm going to just give a couple of different things that happen when we make self-created sound. You know, you were talking about making tones before mm-hmm. that healed, and this is scientifically validated. You get lowered blood pressure and heart rate. You get increased levels of melatonin. And melatonin, of course, is a hormone that is used for sleep. Release of endorphins, which are great, the self-created opiates that work as natural pain relievers. You get the increased levels of nitric oxide, which is a molecule promoted with the healing. It's not nitrous oxide, which is great in the dentist's office, but this is nitric oxide, which is actually voted about 4 years ago as the molecule of the year, which is a strange thing.
Uh-huh.
And finally, you get the release of you get the release of oxytocin, which is the trust hormone. So if you begin to make sound with other people, all these barriers that exist between you all of a sudden disappear, and you become one. I think this stuff is so important, and this is really real, as opposed to, I love a lot of the esoteric work with sound, and I'm very, very much of an esotericist, but at the same time, I think it's important for a lot of people to first begin to believe in the power of sound to understand that there are physiological effects that occur when we either hear or create sound.
Oh, absolutely. And I could not concur with you more. And I'm a firm believer in that. I also, at one time, many years ago, I have, these, they make these crystal bowls these singing bowls.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
The most extraordinary sounds. Now, my first wife and I had one, and we would use it regularly. She was a massage therapist. She would use that in part of her practice from time to time.
Yeah.
I have one of those brass bowls, singing bowls.
Yeah.
And I can still make that sing pretty well, but you find the one, and this is kind of goes along with what you're talking about. If you can find the one, and you have to search and play them,
that's right,
that resonates with you, grab it, buy it, use it. There's a reason why it resonates with you and you with it. There, you know, and I'm a firm believer in, for example, I'm sure that you have your favorite artists, musicians, singers, and so forth, right? That not only you grew
you
up
bet
with, but
sure,
even
totally.
To the even if you listen to them as a kid, you listen to them today, and they still resonate with you. They still have that same, shall we say, power to move you. And I'm going through that phase right now in my 50s, where I'm re-listening to not just the sounds of the songs, but now I'm, of course, getting more in-depth into the words, and I've been finding more about this particular artist and so forth. But I think that's so critical for us, especially today in the times, as the phrase goes, in the times in which we live, to find those things that can draw us closer to nature, closer to the divine, closer to each other, and maybe even the most important, closer to ourselves.
Yes, and I think we're going to, exactly what you said, but we're going to find that, these sounds are very individualistic. These songs are very individualistic. It depends upon the person.
Yeah.
You can't just say, a long time ago, I did this study and, found out that if you get about 70% on any one song of people liking something, you're doing very, very well. And this was actually first discovered in the 1930s. And actually, in terms of percentage of something affecting you, I ask people, it's one of the first questions I ask in a workshop is, how many of you are allergic to penicillin? The reason I ask this is that it's sort of my belief and also quantum physics, if you like, et cetera, and I'm sure, your awareness, too, is that everything is in a state of vibration, and that includes penicillin. So penicillin is a waveform. It's a vibration. And in a workshop, anywhere from 5 to 20 to 25 to even 30% of an audience will raise their hand. I said, okay, so 70 to 80 to even 90% of you will find the frequency of penicillin to be healing. But for anywhere from 5 to 20 to 30% of you, it's going to be toxic. And that's because we are all unique vibratory beings.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's really interesting that you put that in that context, because I just watched a documentary called Unity. Very interesting film that we saw. I think it was on Netflix. And it goes through all kinds of different things and talking about our religions and politics and what the things that divide us and that separate us and so forth. And it's funny because in spite of what you just said, that each one of us is unique, the work that you are doing with sound actually brings us together. It's not one of those, I'm going to say, ego-centered, individualistic concepts. It's more of a, if maybe this is a paradox, a collective individualistic concept, that if we could find our sound, if you will, okay, and then we would bring that together with others and they bring their sound, I can only imagine. Matter of fact, I was in a room once, and I used to attend these groups regularly, where they would have us ohm, but they asked us specifically to find the tone, the note, if you will, that resonated with us as an individual. And do you know that that was the most unbelievable harmonic that I have ever heard?
I totally am in agreement, and I'm being drawn for some reason as we're speaking. I have a track, it's number 3, called The Divine Name I Am, and this was something Wayne Dyer, I guess, is psychically, knocking on my door or something, because he said that you mentioned him before, mm-hmm. and he said of this particular recording, which is called The Divine Name I Am, it's like being cradled in the arms of God.
I'm going to bring that up right now and let us listen to for about 30 seconds.
Okay.
Could get lost in that.
Yeah, very easily.
And the female voice?
That's a woman named Tina Malia, who's, I believe, up for a Grammy this year, and she's quite a good singer. It wasn't me.
I thought you had perfected your falsetto.
Not to that degree, no, indeed.
Now,
but,
go ahead.
You know, quite a question that I would basically ask is, what did that make you feel as you listened to it? And, you know, a lot of people really liked it, and yet on another level, I'm sure that people who may have listened to it and said, what is that? And I take no offense at all, because once again, I do believe that we are such unique vibratory beings that we're never going to find this one sound that's going to work for everybody.
Yeah. Any more than there's one food or one book or one educational system or one career, which is interesting because in working at this Christian radio station, supposedly, in spite of all of that, there was only one path. And each one of them had it. And I thought, really? That's so illogical. It doesn't, that didn't make sense to me. And that's why I think part of the reason why I really began my search at the age of 17. And sound is an enormous part of my life, as obviously as it is with yours. Is most of the music, or maybe in a better phrase, most of the sound that you record, is most of the sound that you record a cappella, or do you use any instrumentation, anything other than the vocal cords?
Well, I would say that 90% of what I do these days, or has been at least, vocal. Although I grew up, I'm a child of the Woodstock generation, and I basically grew up being schooled in the Jimi Hendrix venue of broadcasting. So I was a blues and rock player for a really long time. So, I can play keyboards and all this other stuff, and perhaps at some point in time and space, I will, incorporate that more into into the music that I've done. I've got over 25 CDs, Richard. So it's like, I've usually got to feel divinely inspired to do something rather than, it's time to put out a new CD. I've got to have that inner voice say, we want you to do X, Y, or Z, and usually it's something that has never manifested on the planet before. Otherwise, why do it? I just find it really interesting when you hear two or three songs and you go, well, they just took a Beach Boys song or something like that, and they changed it and they added a hip hop drum. But it's like, why do something that's been done before? That's just my perspective.
The adage I use at the beginning of the program is, why invent the wheel? Why reinvent the wheel? I'm going to send you to them because they have. I'll send you to Jonathan Goldman, to talk about sound, to get more information, rather than me putting together a page or two on my website. I'm just going to send you to the source. That just seems a whole lot smarter and a lot less effort on my part. And I can spend time listening to and diving in. These sound CDs, all 25 of them, seems to me would be really excellent as meditative tools.
They most certainly are. And, you know, I've got all sorts of, not only meditative, but the new term mindfulness seems to come into play a lot. And also a lot of people, I've got file folders full of, for want of a better term, healings that people have experienced. Now, I do not advertise any of my stuff as actually heals this or that because, you know, once again, we are all unique vibratory beings. But it's always, for me, such a blessing to get an email and say, hey, I was listening to your thing and this, you know, chronic condition that I had disappeared. And I go, wow, well, you know, I don't know if the music did that or what, but I'm very, very pleased that this occurred because, what more can you say except that you do your best?
And that's all that I think that any of us can do. And I think one of the interesting things, for example, the aspect of the uniqueness of what we each do, what you do and what I do, and honestly, nobody else does it like us because we're unique individuals. I can't do what you do, and you probably can't do what I do, you know. So we have to carry out our individual tasks for whether you call it the greater good, I say, as far as the big picture is concerned.
I mean, what's really important for me now, I'm a bit older than you, as I gave away in my childhood, the Woodstock Nation type of thing, but is the fact that I really, really, we have an event called World Sound Healing Day that takes place in February, and in it we have literally tens of thousands of people who get together either through the internet or, in private groups or whatnot, and they send a sonic valentine to what I call the Gaia Matrix, or Mother Earth, in order to shift and change the vibrational frequency, because I believe, and there's more and more scientific data to prove, that we can literally shift and activate and raise the consciousness of the planet and the people on the planet, which I think is so necessary, because we are at a really unique stage of our evolution, and unless we get our stuff together, I just don't know what's going to occur. So I think it's really, really important that we try to become awakened.
You know, the thought came to me in relation to our mentioning of the Big Bang and the speaker and the baking soda and water was, get your CDs, get a player, get some giant speakers, and put them face down toward the earth. But it needs to be on open earth. It cannot be on concrete. It has to be on open earth. Mm-hmm. Could be in a park. And just crank it. And do this all over the world, you know. And maybe that will help to raise the consciousness. Because I'm in agreement with you that there are times when, and it was funny because when I was working for this religious radio station, I kept hearing about, the end of the world and the second coming and the Antichrist and so forth. And of course, I'd been reading about how they've been saying this for, 2,000 years.
At least.
So I went to one of these people. I says, is there something that I can do? How can I get involved to help to move this whole thing forward? I mean, this is the scenario that you're painting. And I'm kind of tired of just sitting here. And I mean, I was in my 30s. So, how tired could I be? But I was like, I'm tired of this. So how can I help to precipitate the implementation of the end so that we can move on to something new? You know, because I'm tired of this story. This is a boring, honestly, it is. To me, it's a boring story. There's no excitement in it at all. What we are talking about when it comes to this aspect of sound and raising the consciousness, raising the vibration of the planet, of its people, And everybody has to come to it on their own. Nobody is forcing anybody to do anything. We really, in essence, we don't stand a chance unless we can encourage people to do that. And we're fast approaching the end of our program, and I hate the fact that we're doing that. We're going to end the program with a piece here that I've got queued up. It's the chakra chant.
Can I just say a couple of quick things? First of all, my website is healingsounds.com.
Healingsounds.com.
Okay, and second of all, that experiment that was on Big Bang, if you look up the word cymatics, C-Y-M-A-T-I-C-S, which is a Greek word that means waveform, if you look it up on YouTube, you will find literally hundreds and hundreds of experiments that have been done doing this. And this simply shows the power of sound. I'm going to give you a quote, which is, "Sound shaped into dazzling tool can make, break, or rearrange molecular structure and levitate objects." Now, where did that come from? UFO Daily? No, it came from the New York Times Science section of 1988. And lastly, before we go on to listen to this beautiful piece of music, I mean, I really love it's Crown Chakra Angelic Calling. We heal the planet, we heal ourselves.
Yes.
We heal ourselves, and we heal the planet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I want to, first of all, thank you so much for sharing time with us. I've got three final questions to ask of you. And if you ever find yourself out here in the Santa Barbara area, I would love to have you in studio to continue our conversation.
Ah, well, indeed. And perhaps we can do another show bringing in my beloved wife, Andy, who is, if nothing else, the angel of love.
I would love that.
Whoa.
That would be great. That would be great. First question before we wrap up. Who is Jonathan Goldman?
He's a being who has manifested in order to attempt to help awaken himself and others so that we can basically reach a new level of evolution.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve in the work that you are doing now?
Helping waking up people so they're kind and, if you like, loving to each other.
And this may be redundant. What is your life's purpose?
I believe it has been to help reawaken the awareness of sound as a tool for personal and planetary healing and transformation.
Jonathan Goldman, thank you again. That website one more time?
Healingsounds.com.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We've been talking with Jonathan Goldman, and we've been listening to sound very appropriately. And we're going to go out with the chakra chant, Crown Chakra. And I'm Richard Dugan for Tell Me Your Story. Until next time, love to all.